I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, hardworking, law-abiding Washingtonians have had enough, and they are now fighting back against a system that puts them last.
Get out, Comet! Get out, Comet!
Plus, Berrien's mayor becomes just the latest Democrat to push back against his own party's failures to address the homelessness crisis.
Really, we need to be prioritizing public safety over politics and treatment over tents. And it's time to stand up to the failed policies.
Also, a Republican state lawmaker who happens to be Latina is about to lose her seat in the name of equity. Figure that one out. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support this show of ours for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Beautiful weather. Oh, I'm curious what you guys are doing today. I mean, I appreciate, even though it's so nice out, that you're, for those of you who are consuming the show live, I mean, if you want to watch it when it's dark out and the sun has gone away, I'm totally fine with that as well. It's a beautiful weekend, though. Nicole and I, before we get to all the crazy news that we have to talk about, we were crisscrossing the state of Washington, loving it in the sun. We went down to Pierce County on Friday night to Puyallup Fairgrounds and introduced Dave Reichert at an event down there. And then we scooted on over to Richland for a Feed the Force event at the local VFW there. And it was great. It was a small crowd. It was Congressman Dan Newhouse was there as well and just talked about some of the pressures that law enforcement and first responders are under. Met a bunch of members of the Richland and the West Richland police departments, which I didn't know that there were two, Richland and West Richland. And so they showed up and got a chance to chat with a couple of them, including an officer who's an immigrant from Greece. And I just thought his whole story was just super cool. And he was a nice guy. And
fan of the show.
Fan of the show, which means he's smart, obviously. But it was just nice to be able to get over to the other side of the state, which we've been doing more and more frequently. I feel like we're running a political campaign without actually running a political campaign because we go speak at all these places and meet. I'm not running a political campaign. I'm running a podcast to have a lot of fun. Although I have one bone to pick with law enforcement today. Should I say this?
I think so.
Here I
am. Such a good story. I mean, if you don't use it for this purpose, then
what's
it worth?
Here I am with Nicole in tow, just driving, I don't know, 3 hours to go feed our men and women in uniform.
Yes.
All over the place after just, you know, being at an event to help support former King County Sheriff Dave Reichert. Mm-hmm. I am nothing if not a supporter of law enforcement. Mm-hmm. I got a speeding ticket.
I got a speeding ticket
on the way to Richland. Now, to be clear, I was speeding.
You were.
To be clear, I did deserve it. It was from a state patrolman. And of course, I'm not going to be like, don't you know who I am and what I stand for? Of course not. And
I
we weren't going to be like,
anyway.
I actually do think he knew.
He didn't care.
In case you were curious whether the Washington State Patrol is doing its job without fear or favor, me getting a speeding ticket on the way to an event supporting, which proceeds went to support the Washington State Patrol Memorial Foundation, that's sort of evidence. But look, I told Nicole, I said, hey, when I talk about law and order on this show, I don't mean for me. I mean for everyone else, you know? So anyway, yeah, I got a speeding ticket from the Washington State Patrol.
No good deed goes unpunished.
Man, to say I wasn't a little bit hurt.
I know.
But I was speeding, and it was nice out, you know?
And cut it down a little bit.
We were listening to the nice music and chatting and gabbing and catching up and the sun and...
I know.
Got going a little too fast, so I advise against it. Hey, I'll accept the punishment. I did do it, but
you're not gonna
the irony is not lost on me.
I'm not going to contest it, maybe defer it.
I got to talk to First Mark Insurance first.
Okay.
Ask them what I should do about it. But anyway, I still love you, Washington State Patrol. No hard feelings, a little hard feelings, just a few. But I understand. You're just doing your job and keeping people safe, and speeding is not safe. Anyway, okay, so we talked on the show last week, one of the big stories that we talked about is Jason Roth, Seattle's homeless landlord, finally getting his house back. But at the same time, there's arguably a much worse case that has been playing out in the city of Bellevue that we haven't talked about so far on the show. We might have mentioned it in passing on one or two episodes. But it has to do with a landlord whose name is Jaskaran Singh, and his tenant, and I use that term very loosely because it's just a squatter at this point, a guy named Sang Kim, who has a history of doing this, of getting someone to rent a house to him and then not paying. And Sang Kim has been there now, and this is in Bellevue, for 2 years. 2 years without paying rent. And the backlog and all the issues with the system and protections for tenants that Jason Roth ran into in Seattle, the landlord in this case is also running into these roadblocks to getting this guy who hasn't paid rent in 2 years thrown out. So here's the thing. Law-abiding, hardworking people are fed up. They've had enough. You know, landlords who are trying to provide a service to their community, yes, are they, you know, in some cases making money? Of course they are. Why else would you buy an investment property and then what, rent it out at a loss? That's not happening. But you have these relatively, you know, I think small, mid-sized landlords who are really struggling under the weight of this. So in Bellevue, they've had a freak enough of this. They've had enough of this guy who is going into these homes and stealing. That's what this is. This is theft. So what happened over the weekend? Well, a huge group of citizens showed up in front of this house to essentially try to shame this squatter, Sang Kim, into leaving. Our friend Jonathan Cho was there covering it.
Get out, Kim! Get out, Kim!
How is the Korean community interpreting what's happening here?
They are not aware of this. They're usually a landlord or hardworking business people. They would never imagine a Korean descendant taking advantage of this poor, broken system like this and embarrass not only his family, but entire community. So I was chanting, if you're not going to pay, you shouldn't stay there. And I also called them out as a con man. Sagikun. Sagikun means con man in Korean. What this is going to do is I'm going to provide high-resolution picture of them and ask all the Korean medias to post this on their newsletter and online website and actually have them get famous. Every restaurant he goes, every Korean restaurant he goes, every Korean market he goes, so everybody recognizes him. That way, he's not only just embarrassed to move out of that place, but move out of the state once and for all.
He's not welcome in Washington anymore?
He shouldn't be.
Yeah, that's our friend Jonathan Cho reporting for Discovery Institute. You can also follow him at Cho Show. Just crazy stuff. And I was watching more of the video. And look, yeah, they had photos of this guy out there. They were outside the house. I think a couple people tried to go up and knock on the door. And they didn't make a secret of it. The goal was and is to shame him into leaving the house, giving this small landlord his rental property back, who's out like $80,000, and to shame this guy into doing what's right because every system has let them down. Every system has failed the person who's not doing anything wrong. Again, you know, just like you had in the Jason Roth case, you've got free attorneys for the tenants / squatters who go in there and they delay these eviction cases as far as they can do it. And even when it gets to the point of eviction, then you have this huge backlog in actually executing the eviction if you have someone who's unwilling to leave. So this is what it's come down to, is citizens who've had enough who are having to get together and show up and just try to embarrass the guy so much that he ends up leaving. Now, I'll tell you, and I saw this and I was like, so proud. You know who was there over the weekend? Our friend Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com, one of our wonderful show sponsors. But he was there because this landlord is a friend of his. And he has been, you know, talking to this landlord a lot over the last 2 years about what's going on. And this is also the neighborhood that Wes Jones happens to live in. So Wes was there at the protest. So we thought, Wes, might as well have him in and talk about what went down. Wes, this is weird. Usually we've never had you on for a news interview before.
I know. I can't believe I'm here either.
Well, it's different. Now I can be hard on you.
Oh, I'm gone. I've seen that side of you. I thought we were friends.
We are friends. So this is wild.
Yeah,
I've never seen anything like that.
I've never seen anything like it either, which is one of the reasons that I absolutely had to be there.
Yeah. Well, you have a relationship with the landlord, correct?
I do. Jimmy is a friend. He's not only is he a friend, he is a neighbor of mine. He lives about four blocks away from me. So this is happening in Bellevue. This is happening in my neighborhood of Woodridge. And this is not something that just happens in Seattle because you hear about all the crazy things happening over there. It's happening in Bellevue. It's happening in Redmond. It happens in Tacoma. So if it can happen in Bellevue, yeah, of all places, it can happen anywhere.
And this wasn't like a, you know, oh, the first step is let's bring the whole community there to protest. This has been a long ordeal for him.
This has been a process. Jimmy is going on 2 years of this madness. And he has gone through all of the steps. You know, this guy, you know, his tenant, it's a squatter. Let's be honest at this point. His squatter moved in almost 2 years ago. He paid the first month's rent. He paid the last month's rent. And that was it. I'm pretty sure that there was some help from, you know, the housing justice program along the way that got a couple of months rent. But Jimmy's behind $80,000 in rent. That's absolutely crippling to somebody. You know, Jimmy, he's a guy. He's a small landlord. He's not a super wealthy guy. Like, this is a, you know, this is a problem, and this is putting him in a terrible position.
You first started telling me about this as around the time we were talking about Jason Roth, you know, Seattle's quote unquote homeless landlord, who just last week finally had a resolution. Not ideal, but an eviction was served. He doesn't get any of the money back that was, you know, taken from him in free rent over a year. And the squatter, I like that term better than tenant, isn't going to get an eviction on his record, but he was able to work to get some sort of resolution to get that guy out of his house. What's stopping Jimmy from being able to get resolution in this?
Just the process. King County is so backed up.
Yeah.
And here's what I've learned about through Jimmy's, you know, I'm learning things too, you know, through Jimmy. You know, you've got, you know, the Housing Justice Project, which is funded by the state and by King County. Their only goal is to kick the can down the road for these tenants. It's not to help them, you know, these tenants or these squatters. It's not to help them get into housing that is affordable for them. It's to get them to stay in place. So you've got to be really careful. You have to have all your I's dotted, all your T's crossed, because if you miss one of those, they're going to get you to the bottom of the list again, and that eviction hearing that you had is going to get postponed. That's what's happening to Jimmy right now. There is a massive backlog in King County. In my opinion, they need to work through that immediately. Mm-hmm. Like, that needs to happen now. They are months behind. And there's, you know, there's really nothing that people can do or landlords can do outside of try some settlement like you were just talking about. And I'm sure that has been tried here. My opinion is, based on how this guy has been acting, you know, he is playing the game to stay there as long as he can, because his name is already out there. His credit's going to be trashed. So what is his incentive to move?
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask devil's advocate.
Yeah.
There's some people calling it like vigilante justice. You were there. Was it harassment of this man? Did it go too far?
Oh, Brandy, this was just another peaceful protest. but it really was.
It was peaceful.
It was peaceful. There was about 100 people that were there. Everybody was there in good faith in support of Jimmy, or, you know, in support of small landlords' right, in support of not squatting. Nothing got out of control. You know, there was, you know, people, there were some signs. There was one bad actor there. You know, looks like it was, you know, housing justice or some type of, you know, liberal advocate that was getting in people's faces.
Shocking that that's the side that was causing a problem.
I'm so surprised. He was in people's faces, you know, about, you know, anti-doxing laws and, you know, breaking the law for doxing. I even saw him getting after one of Jimmy's kids. It was disgusting.
But here's the thing about it is, like, I look at that. I'm like, it's sad it came to that.
It is.
It's really sad it came to a bunch of community members having to rally outside this house, like telling a squatter to leave. I mean, are we going to see more of that? Because to me, this is theft.
Mm-hmm.
This should be felony theft, in my opinion. You should be sent to prison. It's like theft by taking. Like, this man's taking
people go to jail for a lot less, for stealing a lot less.
100%.
So I'm absolutely with you. This is theft. This is legal theft based on the laws that we are working with within Washington State. Is this what it's going to come to from moving forward? I don't know. But if this helps move the ball forward, then I hope that it does, because it was peaceful. You know, it was community members, family members, friends showing support and drawing awareness. And what I got
got out of talking to the few politicians that were there yeah. is that they were saying, this is what you are going to need to do. You are going to have to shame the legislature into change by making these stories public. So if this is what it takes, mm-hmm. this is what it takes.
And in cases like Jason Roth, where he finally got this squatter out of his mm-hmm. house, but there's no eviction on his record, so he might try to do it to someone else. But he has now been convicted in the court of public opinion. Like,
yes.
that guy's face is out there. You Google his name, and maybe that's the only punishment there is. Because I look at it as the same, and you had mentioned, like, people go to jail for far less. People's face get put on the news for far less. Like, I think of my friend David Rose over at Fox 13, and they're looking for a suspect in something.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, here's his mugshot.
Yeah.
To me, that's what I see, is this is like a guy who is stealing from someone and his face is on the news. And I just don't feel bad for him.
I don't feel bad for him either, especially since this is the second time in a row that he has done this. This
yeah.
guy is a serial squatter. He has made a business model out of stealing free rent from landlords.
Insane. So let me end with this just as advice for people, because you are also a landlord yourself.
That's right.
I mean, is there any advice you can give to landlords, big and small, to try to protect themselves from a situation like this?
You have it's tough, but you have to do your screening. And it's sad to say that landlords can't take chances anymore. Mm-hmm. And mom and pop landlords like Jimmy, like myself, we were the last people that would be able to take a chance on somebody. And it just becomes more and more clear that that's harder to do. The one piece of advice I'd give other landlords, especially the mom and pop landlords, is don't just check with their current landlord, check with the previous landlord. Because if you've got a problem, like the Airbnb one that you were talking about, is it Jason?
Jason, yeah.
Yeah, that one. Okay. So that current landlord, he can't give a negative, you know, landlord review. But if he had any issues with the previous landlord for these people who are serially offending, mm-hmm. that's where you're going to find that out. So check with the previous landlord, not just their current landlord, because that current landlord could have some incentive to get them out the door.
Oh, 100%. It's he's great. Take him. So was that your first protest?
That was my first protest.
Oh my God, that was Wes's first act of civil unrest?
That's absolutely, I don't know, was it civil unrest? It felt very peaceful.
Civil, disobedience.
I don't know. There was a part of me, Brandy, was like, oh my gosh, you know, as a real estate agent in the community, maybe this is not the place that I should be. It was like, that took about 2 seconds of brain space for me. I'm like, this is my friend, and this is wrong, and I'm going to be there to support him.
Oh, it makes me even more proud to have you as a sponsor on our show.
Absolutely.
I'm like, I knew Wes was a cool guy. I mean, it comes down to this. When no one else is standing up for what's right, people are going to stand up for what's right on their own. It's not ideal, but this is the situation that we're in.
I can't believe that this is where we're at, but if this is where we're at, this is where I'm going to be.
If this is where we're at, this is where I'm going to be. I love it. And I think it's great. It's unfortunate it came to this, right? But the fact is that, okay, what's the other option? Just rolling over and saying, we're okay, perfectly fine living in a state that gives so much protection to tenants that someone can live in someone else's property for free. I mean, stealing tens of thousands of dollars from them in lost wages. And then that we're going to be fine with that and we're just going to roll over? No, hell no, we're not going to roll over. That doesn't make any sense. It's interesting because I saw he was talking about the counter-protester who was there, who I'm actually very familiar with, Bennett Hasselton. He is at a lot of individual events. You know, he protested, for instance, Referendum 101 signature gathering efforts. He counter-protested the sign waving we did for Sheriff Adam Fortney in Snohomish County. I've always found him to be a pretty reasonable guy. He was one of the initial, I think, 6 people arrested for blocking Interstate 5, but then his charge was eventually dropped. And so I don't know if he just like didn't do anything illegal. I've never found him to be too terribly out of control, but he commented on our episode today, Bennett did. He said, I was there at the Bellevue rally and multiple people trespassed on the house property to put their protest signs on his lawn or to bang on his door. The police threatened to arrest me if I went onto the lawn to remove the protest signs that the protesters had put there. Got it all on GoPro. So that's the claim he's making. He says, my position was not to support the tenant, but rather that the whole event seemed to be in violation of Washington's anti-doxing law. Nobody seemed to have a good answer to that. Look, one of the things that I say to that, and again, you know, this is Bennett's version of events, and he says he got it all on GoPro. One of the things I say to that, and I kind of mentioned it with Wes Jones, How many times do you see someone who's wanted? Like on Fox 13, David Rose, and on his social media, he's constantly putting out pictures of, you know, surveillance video of someone who, you know, stole a moving truck, or someone who went in and ransacked a business. And we have no issue with that, of that person who is accused of breaking the law. There's video of them doing it. We can blast them all over the news, and that's somehow not doxing, putting their face out there. But when it comes to someone who has stolen, let's be clear about this, he has stolen in excess of $80,000 from this small landlord, he somehow is owed some measure of protection? I don't think so. I reject that. If he doesn't want his name and his face out there, then he shouldn't be stealing from a landlord who has, you know, invested in a property to try to help make a living off of it. So yeah, I just reject the fact that it's doxing to point out that someone is breaking the law. And also, the left complains about doxing when it's convenient for them. But the masters of doxing people who they don't agree with politically, who haven't done anything else wrong, is the left. And so, well, look, if these people want to take a page out of that playbook for this purpose, I'm totally fine with it. Okay, coming up next, I don't know what's up with our show. Have we become the place where disgruntled Democrats come to complain about the failures of their own party? I love it. Don't stop. But we had a fantastic guest in that regard on Sundays with Subscribers. I've got to play a clip of the interview coming up next. First, I've been talking about my friends at First Mark Insurance, who are going to be really disappointed with me when I call them and tell them I got a speeding ticket over the weekend. I feel like Dave Taylor personally is going to call me and be like, Brandy, we talked about this. You know, we can get you good rates, but only if you're a good driver. I'm very worried about this conversation. But Mike and I have been members of the First Mark family for a year, and had been for almost a year, speeding ticket free, not anymore. But I think this is why I'm glad to have an insurance broker on my side. Like, look, if I get that speeding ticket on my record and I don't get it deferred and my carrier wants to raise my rates, I'm hoping First Mark will go to bat for me. And one of the really wonderful parts about having First Mark in your corner is they work for you. They don't work for the insurance companies, but I also never pay them a dime for their services. Here's Dave Taylor. He's the CEO of First Mark.
I really want to encourage folks, don't try to navigate this current market by yourself. Mm-hmm. I believe you need to get with a broker. Okay, obviously I'd love them to come to First Mark, but at a minimum they need to be with a broker that works with numerous carriers that can give them the advice they need and really help them navigate this right now, because it's complicated.
Yeah, it is complicated, especially if you've got other things going on. Kia, God forbid you drive a Kia and then somebody wants to drop you. What do you do then? So I'm encouraging you just to put an hour aside to take the First Mark challenge. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. They'll go over your current insurance, talk to you about your needs. Maybe you need additional insurance, new coverage on things you just bought, or maybe you just need a better rate and you haven't been able to find it yourself. They can help you with that. And again, you don't pay them a dime. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. They work for you. A growing number of reasonable Democratic leaders in our state are starting to come to terms with the fact that their party has truly failed when it comes to dealing with the homelessness crisis and the drug crisis. The segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. So you guys might recall, we had on the deputy mayor for the city of Kenmore, who is a lifelong Democrat, had been a lifelong Democrat. And she, because residents were pushing back, ended up voting to reject what would have been a housing project for people who were homeless, who were drug addicted, because the city was sold a bill of goods that just wasn't true. You know, initially thought this was going to be low-income housing for, you know, families, and then they thought it was going to be for veterans and the elderly, and then all of a sudden it's like, no, this is for homeless people and people who are actively abusing substances. And so the city of Kenmore is like, look, we want to be helpful. We want to be a partner in the homelessness crisis, but we're not going to have you shove this thing down our throat, and we're certainly not going to have you make us feel bad for it, because after the city of Kenmore tanked this project, remember Governor Inslee came out and called the leaders feckless? He said they were feckless for doing it. So Deputy Mayor Melanie O'Kane, lifelong Democrat, was not pleased with being attacked by the governor and other Democratic leaders in that way. And she came on this show and told everyone that she was now going to be an independent.
I'm an FDR old school Democrat who is an independent today based on how our party is working. And that's what the Democratic Party needs to hear. You're losing people like me.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things she talked about is just, look, we need to do things that work. We want to help the homeless. We want to be empathetic, of course. We want to help people turn their lives around. But we have to do things that work. And we have to make sure that citizens' voices are being heard. And that if you're going to have a project that has serious public safety implications, that we get a good heads up to our citizens and that we hear their feedback. And that's not asking too much. And I agree with her wholeheartedly. And it was just such a tremendous interview. So then fast forward to yesterday, the episode of Sundays with Subscribers we just aired with Berrien Mayor Kevin Schillen. So on the show last week, we talked about how the city of Berrien is currently in a fight, literally a legal battle, with King County, because Berrien passed an ordinance that basically said, look, you can't camp on our sidewalks and in our public places if we have a shelter for you to go to. And the sheriff of King County, who's now a political appointee, so this is obviously a decision that came from King County Executive Dow Constantine, they said behind the scenes, we're not going to enforce that ordinance. So they're basically like, we're just going to ignore all these tents, despite the ordinance that the city of Berrien has put through, and despite the fact that we contract, they contract with us for us to provide law enforcement services to their city. So Berrien Mayor Kevin Schillen is just livid over the whole thing. And now the sheriff's office has turned around and sued the city of Berrien to determine whether their ordinance on camping is even constitutional. But Berrien Mayor Kevin Schillen joined us on Sundays with Subscribers and just said, look, I don't care if it's left or right. I don't care what party I have been with traditionally. What we're doing is not working. And I am going to be someone who stands up and says so.
I'm against do-nothing government.
Yeah.
I do not think it is the job of elected officials to support and continue policies that are shown to do nothing. Mm-hmm. We relentlessly ask people to increase taxes, to spend on policies and programs that do not show positive outcomes. Really, we need to be prioritizing public safety over politics and treatment over tents. And it's time to stand up to the failed policies and say, hey, I'm someone that wants to take action here and make the government work for good.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in perpetuating policies that continuously spend money, see no results, and end up with someone losing their life.
You're weirding me out a little bit, because I thought, aren't you a Democrat?
I'm a full-on Democrat.
Okay.
I'm a third-generation Democrat. I am a Joe Biden, okay, Barack Obama, hardcore Democrat. I have never voted for a Republican in my life. And my three generations of Schilling men in King County have all been Democrats. And in my election, my re-election, where I won 60% of the vote, 70% of my voters are registered Democrats. Hmm. This is a mainstream liberal position to hold. Except I would argue this issue of getting people off the streets, yep, into shelter and services is the defining nonpartisan issue of, mm-hmm, our lifetime. It transcends liberal conservative. It transcends Democratic and Republican, because it is fully about getting people into more positive situations.
But don't you agree that the Democrats have done this? Who else can we blame for it?
I mean, Democrats are in charge of the state of Washington and, yeah, King County, for sure. But I've been saying this ever since I've been an elected official in my own party.
Not a lot of other Democrats have said it with the gusto and the emphasis, though. Well, they cower from it.
They're afraid of losing elections, of party support. Because, right, listen, I mean, I lost party support my last election because I'm saying this.
Mm-hmm.
I did not get endorsed by my party last election cycle, last year. I was openly, not just openly not endorsed, I was openly criticized, mm-hmm, by them. There were editorials in The Stranger calling me out.
When The Stranger criticizes you, you do know that's a compliment, right?
I'm not worried about it. But it is interesting. People, you know, you can't be more concerned about your political future than you, mm-hmm, are concerned about citizens you are supposed to be making decisions for.
Amen. Amen. Berrien Mayor Kevin Schillen. He's now rose to on my list of favorite mayors. And I think we've seen that from a lot of South King County mayors. They're tired of being under the thumb of Seattle politics, of the King County executive who's been in office for four terms. And they're tired of, you know, this one size fits all approach that what Seattle politicians or what works in Seattle and you know, downtown is going to work for them. And it's just not going to, and they're not going to put up with it. And they have, you know, the right and the ability to make individual ordinances that work for their city with what they want to do to deal with the homeless crisis and the drug crisis. What they don't have the ability in some cases to do right now is to have a police department that is going to carry out what they put on the books, because they are still having to work with, in Berrien's case, the King County Sheriff's Office, because they contract with them. Now, one of the things we talked about is it time for Berrien to contract with a city police department that is more in line with how they want to pursue public better public safety? Is it time for them to try to figure out, can they fund their own police department and just leave the King County Sheriff's Office, which again is run by a political appointee, in the dust? But it's a real frustration for them. And I think that we need more people like Melanie O'Kane in the city of Kenmore. We need more people like Kevin Schilling in the city of Berrien to just come out, party be damned, consequences be damned, and say what's obvious. This isn't working. This isn't working. It hasn't been working for 10 years. We put billions of dollars into this. We have more homeless people than we've ever had before. We have more people dying of drug overdoses than we've ever had before. And we have to move on to a different solution. There's nothing controversial about that. And there shouldn't be anything partisan about that. Why would a party want to continue to cling to policies that have failed, clearly, that have left more people living on the streets, that have left more people overdosing on drugs? Is it because you just don't want to admit that you were wrong? Are you that selfish? Are you that sick? That admitting you're wrong is a worse proposition than allowing people to continue to die? So, I mean, I didn't get the Berrien mayor to say he's not going to be a Democrat anymore, although, come on, I'm still hopeful. But, you know, the deputy mayor in Kenmore saying, I'm an independent, if that's what it means to have to pursue reasonable policies is not be a Democrat anymore, then so be it. So I think we're seeing a trend here on the Undivided podcast that Democrats who are frustrated with their party's failed policies come here to say so. And I low-key love it. By the way, you can watch that full interview with Berrien's mayor by becoming an Undivided subscriber. It's just $5 a month. We have great interviews for you every Sunday on important issues. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. All right, on last Thursday's show, we talked to our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital about some of these shiny objects that are out there right now that are catching the eye of some amateur investors. You know, oh, gold. Should I be investing gold? If so, how much of my savings should I put into gold? Or Bitcoin, which has just been going crazy. Well, Zach kind of, and one of the things they specialize in at Bulwark Capital is just trying to not eliminate risk, because you can never eliminate risk in investments, but make sure you're being realistic about what kind of risk you take on. And for him, Bitcoin just ain't it.
I think what these things are showing is a ramp up in liquidity. I think they're reflecting the ridiculous amount of money our government is spending. And Bitcoin especially is just a wonderful catch basin for excess liquidity in the system, right? When liquidity goes up and governments start pumping, Bitcoin's going to go up. And so, but there are a lot of people out there, oh yeah, and Bitcoin, I trust, put everything in Bitcoin. Listen, if anybody's telling you to put everything in one thing, that's the one person you know is you shouldn't listen to.
Yeah.
Okay. Because we don't know. Bitcoin has no real intrinsic value. It has no real cash flows. So it's like gold in that way, right? You're just hoping it goes up.
Yeah. So you can try some of these new flashy things or some of these things that are getting a lot of attention and grabbing headlines, but just make sure that you're managing your risk. That's what Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital specialize in. I recommend having a risk review with them. It is absolutely free, and making sure that you are properly protecting your retirement and your retirement portfolio. You can schedule that risk review at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. There has been this whole fight happening over redistricting in Washington state. And you probably saw some headlines over the weekend. We're going to try to give you some context on this, but essentially a Latina Republican state senator has been redistricted out of her seat, all of it in the name of equity. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. All right, so a federal judge has redrew the legislative map in central Washington. And this is like gerrymandering at its best. I mean, if you've seen pictures of the map, it like gave these districts just these weird phalanges. So it redrew and took out the 15th. And it was like, you got the 17th, like a hand creeping into the 14th, and then like the 14th all like an octopus into these other areas. I mean, it just looks gerrymandered. It looks problematic. A little background here from our friends at the Center Square. Again, federal judge redraws legislative map in central Washington. The new map joins Latino communities from East Yakima in Yakima County to Pasco in Franklin County. In addition, the district was switched from the 15th legislative district to the 14th legislative district, with the thinking being this will ensure state Senate elections fall during a presidential election year when Latino voter turnout is generally higher. The federal judge's decision comes after his ruling in August 2023 in Soto Palmer versus Hobbs that legislative maps drawn in 2021 by the Washington State Redistricting Commission for the Yakima Valley cracked or diluted the Latino vote. So there's this complaint that, hey, what the Redistricting Commission did in 2021, you're diluting the Latino vote, we have a problem with it, goes to this judge, and he agrees. So it says the decision from the judge was a result of the state and Secretary of State Steve Hobbs being sued after the Redistricting Commission completed its work. Plaintiffs claimed the original map failed to comply with federal voting rights law. Interesting. So this whole fight about these districts in particular has to do with you can't split the Latino vote. In fact, we want to actually do the opposite. And this is, and we've seen some Democrats admit, this is basically gerrymandering to try to couple Latino voters all into one district and then put it, make sure it's on an election year where you have better Latino voting turnout. The only issue with that is that in doing all of this in the name of Latino voters, they have redistricted out of her seat a Latina state senator. Now, why wouldn't Democrats find that problematic? Like, hey, this whole thing was about making sure that Latino voters were better represented and that they could better pursue representation. That to me assumes that they want Latino representation. So why would Democrats not have an issue with a judge basically removing a Latina senator from her seat? Well, it's because she's a Republican. She's not the right kind of representation for Latinos in the eyes of the Democratic Party. This is from The Columbian. Redistricting map meant to fix systemic racism ousts first Latina senator in Central Washington. How do you even wrap your mind around this one? State Senator Nikki Torres, a Republican from Pasco, says a new map detailing the boundaries of Washington's legislative districts has effectively drawn her out of the 15th legislative district. Quote, this map moves me out of my district, she said in a statement. I can stay the next 2 years, but then I'll be cut from helping the constituents who I grew up with and who I love to serve. She says this map disenfranchises Hispanics, all to help the Democratic Party gain seats toward a supermajority in the legislature. I presume that Judge Lansick made the decision under the guise that a preferred Latino candidate was a Democrat. And that's kind of what I think, too, is like, oh, they've got a Latina candidate. Yeah, but they've got a Latina senator. Yeah, but she's a Republican. She's not looking out for their best interest. She added that the decision discriminates and stereotypes Hispanics, a population that is much more politically diverse and willing to back Republicans than progressives believe. She said, for a group of people who claim to want to know about the lived experience of their neighbors, they seem to want to ignore ours in their thirst for political power. And that is what this is about. This is about drawing districts that are more beneficial to Democrats. This is about drawing districts that they believe, yes, might send a Latino to the state legislature, but a Latino who fits the stereotype that they want them to fit. They have it in their minds, which I would argue that polling has increasingly disproven, that Latino voters, that Hispanic voters, oh, they're Democratic voters. No, they're not. Increasingly less so. And if you needed proof of that, just look toward the state senator who was elected in Central Washington by her constituents, many of whom were Hispanic. A state lawmaker who is herself Hispanic. But that's not good enough for Democrats because it doesn't give them a seat. And more than that, I think, they're offended by the notion that the districts were drawn in a way that gave a Republican Latina a seat that they believe belongs to a Democratic Hispanic state lawmaker. It is really crazy stuff. This is not the last time we're going to talk about this. I wanted to sort of set the stage and let you guys know what's happening here right now, because I think this is going to continue to get more and more attention, and it's going to continue to be a fight. And honestly, I think that it is going to have the opposite of the effect that Democrats believe it's going to have in Central Washington. I believe that Democrats are going to get a rude awakening even with the redistricting, that Hispanic voters in Central Washington don't like the idea that the Latina lawmaker they chose wasn't good enough for the Democrats. Wasn't what? Wasn't Hispanic enough for the Democrats? And that the Democrats believe that they have to fit as Hispanic voters into a box that results in them voting for a Democrat. It's really crazy stuff. I think it's going to backfire. I truly hope it does. All right, you heard from him earlier on the show. That doesn't mean that we're not going to do our regular sellwithwest.com pitch to all of you. If you're thinking about selling your home this year, we don't know what the Fed's going to do with interest rates. If they drop interest rates, there is going to be a rush to the housing market of buyers who've just been waiting. And so it's really important that you as a home seller are ready to go. So if you're thinking about selling your home at any point in 2024, make sure it's ready to hit the market as soon as the Fed drops interest rates. Our friend Wes says that he believes, by the way, even if they don't drop interest rates, that there is still going to be, 2024 is going to be an improved market compared to 2023.
If we're sitting stagnant at where we're at now, we're still going to see more sales. We're going to see more people transact in 2024 than we did in 2023. I feel really strongly about that. Nationwide, we sold about 4 million homes, residential units, in 2023. I think that's going up. It'll be more like 4.5 million. There's too much pent up demand. If they stay where they're at right now, I actually think that values will stay closer to where they're at. We'll see lower appreciation. We'll see appreciation, but it'll be modest. But if they start to come back down, well, that's when I think we'll start to see more of the multiple offer situations and the bid ups in home sale prices.
Yeah. So the bottom line is, if you're thinking about selling your home, you need to make sure it's ready to hit the market when it's going to be most advantageous for you as a home seller. So visit sellwithwest.com, sellwithwest.com. First thing he's going to do, he's going to give you a free market analysis so your expectations are in the right place. And then he's going to talk to you about some of the services they offer that you're not going to find elsewhere, like the Listing Boost Concierge Service, where they can come in, help you make cosmetic upgrades to your home. They can manage those projects, even help you pay for them up front. So sellwithwest.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, let's dip outside of Washington State and talk about some national news. The Trump bloodbath thing is just so indicative of the state of the media right now. So if you aren't familiar with this, so Donald Trump's given a speech, right? And he's talking about the auto industry in China. Nicole, you cut this video. Is it full in context, I'm assuming? Because we play clips in context on the Undivided podcast.
Of course.
So these are former President Donald Trump's comments in context.
Let me tell you something to China. If you're listening, President Xi, and you and I are friends, but he understands the way I deal, those big monster car manufacturing plants that you're building in Mexico right now, and you think you're going to get that, you're going to not hire Americans, and you're going to sell the cars to us now, we're going to put a 100% tariff on every single car that comes across the line, and you're not going to be able to sell those cars. If I get elected... Now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole. That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That'll be the least of it.
So very clear that he mentioned, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath in the context of talking about what's going to happen with the auto industry, right? Very, very clear if you are operating in good faith. Well, the media doesn't operate in good faith, and they want to paint former President Donald Trump as no matter what he says, it's about what he's going to do if he's reelected. He's going to ruin the country. He's going to be, you know, there's going to be violence and death or whatever it is. They want to continue to paint him as a very, very dangerous man. So all the headlines from the networks were just about the same. Something to the effect of, like NBC News, Trump says there will be a bloodbath if he loses the election. CBS News, in Ohio rally, Trump says there will be a bloodbath if he loses the election, and so on and so forth. And all the Rolling Stone, all these outlets had some iteration of suggesting that Donald Trump claimed if he loses the election, there will be a bloodbath, without offering any sort of context that he was talking about a bloodbath in the auto industry. And I saw this other viral clip, which was kind of funny of, you know, after they were caught red-handed, just totally taking this out of context, some of the news networks were trying to avoid criticism by suggesting that the phrase bloodbath is like too violent and shouldn't be used. And somebody put this viral clip together of like all the times that MSNBC and CNN have used bloodbath in reference to elections, you know, not Donald Trump. So it's like clearly they're just trying to save their own, you know what. But this is what's, I mean, this is, there's so many things wrong with this. So I do believe that you can have some legitimate conversations about January 6th and about what former President Donald Trump might do again if he's elected. I believe that there are some weak spots there that we should be able to have a dialogue about. I think he could have done more on January 6th. Is he going to do something like this again if he loses in 2024, et cetera? But the idea that, you know, the media is so dead set on painting him as a dangerous man that it takes these out of context statements to try to prop up that argument. What I don't know if they realize or not is it will have the opposite effect. It will absolutely have the opposite effect of desensitizing voters to basically anything that Donald Trump says. And here's what I mean by that. When I was back in mainstream news, there was a point where I had a conversation with some of our producers about we need to pick and choose our Trump stories. And this is when I hadn't quite been red-pilled. I wasn't clearly a very big fan of Donald Trump. I was very upset with the fake news media statements that he was making and what it meant for us in our work day to day. But I mean, we were doing, even as a local news entity, we were doing every single slip up Donald Trump has. We were putting it in our newscast. Every little thing, he said something weird, he did something weird, everything we did. And the conversation I had with producers is that's overload. And what you're going to do is you're going to make people tune out when he does do something that's worthy of media attention and that is worthy of criticism. They're going to be like, oh, Fox 13 doing another Donald Trump hate-a-thon again. And they're going to ignore it when it actually matters. Like, for instance, we were doing, and I was totally guilty of this, you know, during the first at least year or 2 years of Donald Trump's time in office. You know, when he was, where was he, Haiti or something, where he was throwing the paper towels to
Puerto Rico,
maybe, where he was like, you know, there had been a big hurricane and there were people there and he was visiting and he was hurling paper towels at them. And we were doing a story on that, you know, about how it was not sensitive towards what was going on. It was all of these things. But then it got to the more serious Donald Trump stories. And by that time, people had fatigue. They had Donald Trump fatigue. They were tired of the media just being relentless about every little thing he did. So when it came to, you know, phone calls that were questionable or whatever it is, people had just tuned out. So I don't know what the media thinks it's doing with this. In just blatantly taking it out of context. It's also the same effect that the prosecutions against Trump are having. Trump, I think, would have had a DOA campaign had these prosecutions against him not started in earnest. Because remember, Ron DeSantis was like doing great. Everybody was excited. Most Republicans seemed on board with Ron DeSantis sort of taking over the reins. But then the prosecution started against Donald Trump. And then it got everybody all like, man, they will not leave this guy alone. They will not stop. And so they were like, they cared less about getting him out of office. So that's what the media is doing here. And the media is creating a bloodbath of its own. The media ecosystem has already been destroyed. I mean, it is a skeleton at this point from where it was even 5-10 years ago. And that they are just hastening their own demise. They are hastening their own metaphorical bloodbath, to be clear, because stuff like this, they just lose trust from people more and more every single day. All right, I want to talk about lowering standards in policing. So this comes out of Metro Nashville Police Department, and we've talked a little bit about these issues, you know, in 2020 and the defund debate and these efforts to diversify police departments and to change hiring standards so they could diversify police departments. And we're seeing that in Nashville with female recruits. So basically, they want to increase the number of female recruits and thus female police officers. And so there is also an effort to say, okay, one, why are there fewer female recruits? Can they not pass the requirements? I mean, I think you just, policing as a profession, I think you just don't have as many females who want to do it. But there's also, you know, the physical agility and ability test that they need to go through. And we know women aren't as strong as men. I mean, I don't think that's true in every case. You might have some very weak men that a strong woman is stronger than, but we talk about this all the time with gender identity and stuff. A woman's body is just different than a man's. So yes, if you have the same physical fitness requirements to get a job, you'll probably have fewer women who are able to pass those physical fitness requirements. This is from WSMV4 in Nashville. As of February 2024, Commander Gibson of the Metro Nashville Police Department said that their numbers showed women made up 13% of Metro's total police force, edging closer to the 30% goal. So their goal is 30%. 13% is a long way from 30%. And so they're trying to be like, okay, what can we do to attract more women? It says lactation rooms for nursing moms, More flexible schedules and physical test modifications are among the changes the police department has made to help attract new recruits, especially women. That's in addition to their already paid maternity leave and sick time. Looking to the future, Gibson said conversations are underway, trying to lay the foundation for a 24/7 childcare facility for Metro Police families. So they're doing all these things. Like, some of that, look, I think those are benefits that could also help men. I mean, the idea that, like, a male officer might not benefit from a 24/7 childcare facility, I think, is a little bit sexist. I think that that could also help men. Some of these things, yeah, lactation room, that doesn't bother me. No big deal there. Flexible schedules, as long as you're allowing everyone flexible schedules. I mean, you know, women are moms, but dads are dads. And so I think if they've got kids and that's your concern here, that offering everyone flexible schedules, as long as it's flexible across the board, like, I have no problem with that. The physical fitness test thing has me concerned. And here's why I say that. So back in the day when I was at Fox, I did this whole series on the process to become a Seattle police officer. And actually, a lot of that's secretive. And so I had to apply to become a Seattle police officer. And the department knew I was doing it. And I went through, I did a 6-hour test on the campus of the University of Washington, a written test. I passed that. And I don't know if there was a step in between, but I ended up down at the academy to do the physical fitness portion of the test, which I failed because I just couldn't do a freaking push-up to save my life. But anyway, they let me continue to do a couple of the things after I officially flunked out of the process. But the police department in Nashville, there's this video that we've pulled that shows a couple of the ridiculously easy obstacle courses that recruits to Nashville would have to pass in order to make it to the next phase in the hiring process. So let's see how physically testing these are.
This is the chain link fence climb. For this test, you're to run up to the fence, scale the fence, and continue running to the finish line. The test may be administered twice with at least a 2-minute rest period between administrations. Your fastest time will be used as your
the
score.
The fence is like 4 feet high.
Solid wall climb. For this test, you're to run up to the wall, scale the wall, and continue running to the finish line. This test may be administered twice with at least 2 minutes rest period between administrations. Your fastest time will be used as your score. 99-yard agility run. This test simulates a short-distance foot pursuit that could occur in a parking lot. This test requires you to make frequent changes of directions while running as fast as possible.
Why did I have to run around cones?
You will have to step over several obstacles and clear a small obstacle while continue running. This test may be administered twice, if desired, with a 2-minute rest period between tests.
You have to be kidding me. He goes, you'll have to clear a small obstacle. It's like a stick on the ground. And the whole chain link versus a solid wall climb. I get it that with a chain link, you could put your feet and your hands in there, but mm-hmm. they were both like 4 feet high. Mm-hmm. And you could see the woman just grabs the top of it and just sort of steps over. So, I mean, a 5-year-old could do those. Genuinely, a 5-year-old could do both of those things. And so I don't really know who you're eliminating. I mean, again, I guess you're eliminating someone with a physical disability that, like, maybe doesn't have an arm and couldn't get themselves up over there. But who are you, genuinely, who are you eliminating? I mean, someone who I guess is so physically obese that they cannot get themselves over a 4-foot tall chain link fence?
I think what they're saying here is that physical, you know, this type of physical requirement is not a requirement anymore.
No.
So now you just got to pass the mentals
right.
and the gun
it's,
test and all that.
It's
this
so
is
low
issue.
That mm-hmm. that physical fitness, it's like it doesn't even matter. And mm-hmm. it really does matter. I'll get to our Daily Show poll in a moment. But you're talking about, and again, I'm not obviously sexist, but I do believe that, you know, the smaller you are, the more petite you are, for instance, I mean, obviously you've got a gun, you've got other less than lethal stuff, but if you're a small petite woman, and you're in a ground fight with a suspect, those things aren't going to help you one bit. And you might get some training to engage in hand-to-hand combat, but if you're dealing with a man who's significantly larger than you, they're going to kill you. They're going to kill you, they're going to get your gun or whatever it is. And so the idea that you have put physical fitness tests so low that a woman who's not physically fit by any reasonable standard would be able to become a police officer, that's not just dangerous for the community, that's dangerous for her. That is really dangerous for her to be put into these situations where she could more easily be injured or killed. And so I just don't get it. I mean, you know, I think that there, I remember the test I did, like with push-ups. I'm like, okay, I can't do 20 push-ups in whatever amount of time. What do you want from me? And I was in pretty good shape at the time. You know, women don't have a lot of upper body strength, but I still was like pretty physically fit. And so I felt like, man, I should have been able to pass this. You know, like I felt like I was physically fit enough to be able to be a police officer with a little bit of training. But this stuff is ridiculous. So I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll, should physical fitness standards be lowered to allow more women into law enforcement? And there was a little bit of a difference of opinion. Some of you said yes. And of course, as long as it's even, right? Because if you're going to lower it for women, wouldn't you have to lower it for men? You can't just say the women have less requirements than the men. Let me see here. David said, qualified yes, so long as the standards are not essential to the performance and everyone, male and female, and quote, unknown, are held to the same standards. I mean, we have all seen older, out of shape cops on the force who could not pass the standards if they had to retake them. And my only issue with that is when you say that the standards are not essential to the performance, then why are you doing that? If you're putting them up against physical fitness standards that aren't essential to the performance of the job, then why do they even have to go through those physical fitness standards? Every test you put them through to get the job should be critical to the performance of the job, or else it's just a wasted test. Richard says no, because those standards exist in large part to keep those officers alive and unharmed. Lowering the standards puts them at risk. I agree. Joel says, men and women have to count on each other in the worst case scenario, so the standards should be the same. That's fair too. If you're an officer and your closest backup is a woman, I sure as hell, if you're a male officer and your closest backup is a female officer, I sure as hell hope that she passed some physical fitness requirements above and beyond hopping over a 4-foot high chain link fence and running around a couple cones on the ground and jumping over a stick. Because, like, if I'm in a ground fight, which just happened, and not to say that men don't lose ground fights with suspects, too. We have seen that happen as well. But I think the odds are much lower when they are physically comparable in strength and in size. And that's why I think you still have height standards for police, right? Gosh, I think so.
I don't know.
There's got to be a minimum height requirement. And maybe it varies from department to department, but there's reasons for this, right? Let me see here. Jim Bob says, depends on the position. If they're going to be a beat cop and chase down bad people, the standards should be high. If they are purely a desk job collecting money from meters and certain other jobs, then okay, lower the standards. But I think the issue when you enter a police force is you're not entering for a specific job. If you're signing up to be a cop, you're going to work a bunch of different jobs over the course of your career. One might be a desk job, one might be a detective job, one might be SWAT if you want to do that or whatever it is, or you might be out on the beat. So I'm very curious to hear more from you guys on this, particularly if any of you are law enforcement officers, about how you feel about dropping standards for physical fitness to increase diversity in police ranks. Because I'm not for it. That those tests I saw in Nashville, I'm sorry, jumping over a stick does not like make you physically fit. But there was also a good comment in there that brought up a good point. I see out of shape police officers all the time who, if they had to go back and take those physical fitness tests, would not be able to do it. So that's the question too, is like, are you making them pass this now, but then 5 years down the road, like they've gained 70 pounds and they can't do any of that and that's okay because they're doing the job anyway? So it's kind of interesting that they don't go back routinely and check physical fitness of people who are out there doing those same jobs still. So I don't know. Did you find the answer? Is there a height limit?
It looks like it was recently, I don't know if this is uniform, but it was 6 foot. Now it's 5'7". It was recently lowered, but I'm not sure if that's all departments or nationwide. I just found that in a lot of
spots. But wouldn't that have to be for men, right? Because a lot of women aren't 5'7". Or is that across the board?
That's unclear in what the information
I've That's really strange. I mean, I'm 5'7", and I've seen a lot of police officers who are shorter than me.
Yeah, I would think it's determined by the physical ability, but I don't know.
Interesting. Weird. Okay, let's get to questions and comments. Baron of Gray Matter with $10 super chat for the speeding ticket and or a nice glass of wine. Not to be used simultaneously, be well. Yeah, thank you for that. I will not have a nice glass of wine and then go speeding, obviously. And now I've got to be so Nicole and I were laughing because the rest of the way to Richland, I was like, the speed limit. Because once you get a speeding ticket, you kind of can't get another one right away.
And it felt so slow.
I told Nicole, I said, I feel like I'm driving in slow motion. It feels like it's taking forever to get there. But I hadn't gotten a speeding ticket in quite a while. Good I want to say, you. That's not to say I didn't get warnings.
I really bet you can get that deferred, but
I think you can get it deferred if you don't get another one in a certain period of time, and then it's like, yeah. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what I can do. I just had to complain about it briefly. yeah. So like I said, if you think police are out there just like being discriminating and stuff. Uh-huh. They didn't even let me off the hook, so I don't know what level of discrimination is out there.
And he seemed to take joy in it, actually.
I don't think he took joy in it.
I don't know. He was very nice. He was very nice, maybe, but he kind of thought it was funny.
Maybe he's the rare state trooper who hates our show.
I don't know if he hates it. I just think he thought it was a little comical.
It was comical.
I know. Then he said, hey, beware of the planes up there. He's
basically like, slow down because the next county will get you too. Yeah. all right. Dan Harder says, I got a TABS ticket from Mercer Island PD. I said they should enforce the drug laws. And they said they do. It's Seattle that doesn't. That's the other thing that bothers me. Here I am, you know, mostly a law-abiding citizen, mm-hmm. working hard, paying my taxes, going to a nice charity event, and I'm getting ticketed and pulled over. Yeah, no. Meanwhile, you go like a few miles this way and see people shooting up drugs and breaking into things, and they're just, you know what I should have done is I should have fled.
No.
I should have fled the traffic stop.
These people would have heard about that a different way. Should have
fled the traffic stop before the initiative takes effect, which I don't think it has yet, right?
I think it was 90 days past the date something. Yeah. I don't
anyway,
know.
Next time. I wouldn't flee a traffic stop. Okay, I'm getting a little carried away. On the Bellevue landlord-tenant situation, Matthew Cook says, local media, either Como or Cairo, wouldn't print the squatter's name. Why? Because I guess he hasn't been convicted of anything or charged with a crime. And I get it, but I don't understand why that's not a felony theft case. That doesn't make any sense. How can that not be a felony theft case? I think the limit in Washington is maybe $750 and above. If you steal something up to that value, then it's felony versus a misdemeanor theft case. This guy has stolen more than $80,000 right out of the pocket of this landlord. It's as good as theft. So yeah, I mean, I don't understand. It should be treated like a serious crime because it is.
I know, and the trespassing thing, that was really frustrating because it's Jimmy's property. Yeah. He gave them permission. So yeah. I don't understand
because when you rent it out, you can't as a landlord just show up. You can't as a landlord just show up whenever
you
want.
All you have to do is get notice, though.
Yeah,
I'm
but
sure
you can't.
He gave some notice.
I doubt that he was like, we're going to have 100 people there coming on the property in 2 days. And that's not a legitimate reason for a landlord to like gain entry to a property or be on your property. So when you're a landlord, you have to follow rules like that. I do get it. But at the same time, this guy isn't following the rules and you're so past the point of common sense, of patience or whatever it is. What do you do? Well, this is what the community decided to do. And honestly, I'm all for it. Andy Astell says, I'm not about admitting they're wrong. It's about... Andy Astell's on the city of Burien situation, and the mayor's speaking out about other Democrats. He said, it's not about admitting they're wrong. It's about funding their friends in high places that run the homeless industrial complex. I do agree with that, too, is that, you know, they know that they have to know that their approach to homelessness isn't working. And they're spending billions of dollars on it. It's not working. But they're giving money to all these organizations that are going out there and doing the work and not getting. So they don't want the gravy train to stop. Mm-hmm. All right. Also on Burien, Amanda Chang says, I used to live in Burien. They put a tiny home village near my house off 116th Street Southwest. I woke up to someone trying to break in our home at 2:30 a.m. The police showed up and took the two homeless people away. And that's why cities deserve to have a say and control over how their homeless crisis is dealt with. That's why Kenmore had every right in the world to say, no, you know, we thought this was going to be housing for low-income families. Now you're saying it's going to be people who are drug addicted. We're not okay with that. Citizens aren't okay with that. Let me see. Greg Olakis says, so can't Burien sue the King County Sheriff's Office for breach of contract? Well, I actually, and this was part of our conversation we had with the mayor on Sunday, they're contemplating not paying them. They're contemplating not paying them for their services until they are following through on the expectations under the contract. I don't know if they're going to do that for sure, but there's a lot happening with this, and I don't know if that's off the table.
I was just going to say, it sounds like everything's on the table right now. Mm-hmm. They're in discussions about it.
Yeah. Matthew Cook says, I like what the mayor is saying, but he's a perfect example of tribalism. Votes for the same party, but is mad about the results. These policies aren't a surprise. Dow and others are open where they stand. And that's the thing I did not Kevin Schilling for. Did he endorse? No, he hasn't yet. Did he? Wait, no. Did he endorse Bob Ferguson? I can't remember if he officially did or not. Maybe he hasn't yet. But that's the thing. It's like, you have these reasonable voters who are so tired of Democratic policies, but the only thing they're not tired of is voting for Democrats. It's like, when do you connect the two? You're tired of Democratic policies. That means you should also be tired of voting for Democrats, because you're not going to get anything different until you try something different. Sorry if I accuse Kevin of endorsing Bob Ferguson without knowing for sure.
I'm looking.
Okay. I had a conversation about it, but I can't remember if he said he did endorse him or he hasn't endorsed him yet. Can't recall. Let me see. Baron of Gray Matter with a $5 super chat. Homeless industrial complex makes NGOs and politicians tons of money. They don't want to fix it. I agree. On the redistricting, Todd Welch says the entire redistricting should be thrown out. The process was corrupted by both Democrats and Republicans. Look, if throwing it out and starting over is what we need to do, then so be it. Denise Young, do we have a Miranda update? I hope she's feeling better. I talked to her this morning. She's still a little groggy. So she had COVID. Did I say that?
Oh, no.
No. So she, remember, she was sick on Thursday and she called. She had this crazy sore throat, which was terrifying for her, because last time she got sick, she ended up intubated for 8 days. And so she ended up going to the hospital, and she did test positive for COVID, which for someone with severe asthma like her can be a little bit scary, but she's feeling better today. She said she's been a little bit up and down, but her voice sounded much better this morning. Thanks for asking, Denise. That's so sweet. Good. All right.
Pierre one more. Mayor has not endorsed.
Oh, he has not endorsed
him yet.
I don't
believe so. Thank God. He's not listed.
Thank God. Or else I might have deleted that whole episode. Angela Mather Wind says, my grandma, who is turning 103 years old, never voted for a Republican before 2016. She's just frustrated how things are going. She's not declaring a party anymore. That's awesome. 103 years old.
Good for her.
And you just started in your 90s saying, I'm not voting for Democrats. In her defense, Democrats have changed a lot over the span of her life. And Republicans have as well. But I mean, like, you look at Bill Clinton and even Joe Biden and some of the things he said before he was vice president, he was in the Senate. Those are Republican talking points, like his talking points on the border when he was in the Senate, for instance. Now he would be like, oh, that's a MAGA extreme talking point. Dude, those are your talking points from 20 years ago. So the parties change a lot. And the idea that voters wouldn't also reassess whether the parties have changed too much for them to be part of them, I think, is a little odd. All right. Those have been your questions and comments for today. We're a little bit over, but I think we can get to Mayor Bruce Harrell. We praised him last week because he was having community safety forms. Well, his first form got a mixed review. Let's talk about it in our closing sanity check. All right, so goodies having the public safety forms. Like to see Seattle's mayor out there listening to people on such an important issue. This is from MyNorthwest.com. Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell gets mixed reviews in first safety form. It says, in light of a recent spate of shootings in Seattle, Mayor Bruce Harrell proclaimed, too many people have too many guns during a city public safety forum Thursday night. Here's a clip.
When I talked about us recovering 1,500 illegal firearms last year, that is a record for the city. A lot of guns come through here. And so when I talk about the 1,500 guns that our department have seized, there's probably thousands of guns right now in the wrong hands that are going to commit a crime. So my solution is twofold. Number one, I'm pushing to put something on the ballot. I love to see something on the ballot to give cities to get out from under that preemption. I'm tired of waiting on the federal government to address this issue. How many more mass killings do we have to have? Now, let's give the state some credit in terms of banning assault rifles, more stringent background checks. We are a country that allows this kind of gun use, unlike many other countries.
Wow. No, we as a country don't allow that kind of gun use. We as a country and a state actually do not allow the kind of gun use where a felon can use a firearm and shoot another human being with it. That kind of gun use is already strictly prohibited everywhere across the United States. So the problem that he's pointing out and the solution that he's putting forth have absolutely nothing to do with each other. And there is no ballot measure short of giving law enforcement more funds to go after criminals and gang members. There is no other ballot measure or gun control measure that could fix the problem that he is pointing out, with guns in the hands of people who legally are not allowed to have them. None of the steps taken at the state level that he pointed out and celebrated there, with the banning of so-called assault weapons, that's not having any impact on the violence that we're seeing on our streets. The vast majority of homicides and shootings are not happening with a quote-unquote assault weapon. And prior to you banning assault weapons, It was already against the law to use an assault weapon to hurt another or kill another human being or to carry out a drive-by shooting as a gang member. The only thing that will help solve the problem that the mayor is pointing out, which I do believe is a legitimate problem, that you've got that many guns in the hands of felons and criminals, the only thing that will solve that is stricter enforcement, is making sure we have enough police resources for them to be out there stopping people, getting guns off the streets, and simultaneously throwing the book at every single criminal who uses a gun in the commission of a crime. Right now, neither of those two things are happening, and until they are, what the problem the mayor wants to solve for is not going to get any better. All right, that has been our sanity check for today, and that has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. A reminder, go check out that interview with Berean Mayor Kevin Schilling on yesterday's episode of Sundays with Subscribers. You can become a subscriber and support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com.